Trigger alert here in the United States. Ours pointed at our presumed enemies, and theirs pointed at ours. So during the recent commemorations of the United States dropping the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, when someone who is from Hiroshima tells you,
"It is very crucial time for the humankind, regardless of where you live, United States, Asia, Europe, doesn't matter. It is a very, very dangerous time. So I want everyone to stand up and make their voices heard. Demand your government, demand the politicians who are accountable to you, because they are supposed to represent you. Make them hear you that you want peace and not war, and you really want nuclear weapons abolished and also nuclear power plants abolished as well."
When you hear something like that from someone who has lived personally with the legacy of the atomic bomb, you know that no matter what you do, you are in that radioactive seat that we all share.
Nuclear hot seat, what are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat, what have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat, the corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are leaking. Nuclear hot seat, it's the bomb.
Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly international news magazine keeping you up to date on all things nuclear from a different perspective. My name is Libby Halevi. I am the producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island from just 1 mile away. So I know what can happen when those nuclear so-called experts get it wrong. This week, we hear from peace and anti-nuclear activists who spoke at one of the many commemoration events marking the 74th anniversary of the dropping of the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We will also hear the profound, moving 2018 Nobel Peace Prize acceptance speech by Hibakusha, meaning a survivor of the Hiroshima bomb, Hibakusha Setsuko Thurlow, speaking about her experience in Hiroshima on August 6, 1945, and her work with the International Campaign for the Abolition of Nuclear Weapons. We will also have nuclear news from around the world, numbnuts of the week for outstanding nuclear boneheadedness, and more honest nuclear information than one can ever hope to get out of Russia. All of it coming up in just a few moments. Today is Tuesday, August 6, 2019, and here is the week's nuclear news from a different perspective. The 800-pound gorilla of a story this week is the big ongoing story out of Russia, where last Thursday, August 8, a new missile design that was being tested at a site in northern Russia exploded on an offshore platform near the town of Severodvinsk. Shortly after the explosion, local authorities in Severodvinsk released a statement saying that there had been a radiation spike following the blast that was picked up by two separate monitors in the town. They reported that radiation levels spiked at 11:50 a.m. local time, and that by 2 p.m. radiation levels had returned to normal. But the size of the spike, as they reported it, was 200 times background radiation, which is enormous. However, Russian statements about the intensity of the radiation release have been contradictory. Scientists with the Russian Federal Nuclear Agency said on Sunday that radiation levels had climbed briefly to twice the background level in Severodvinsk, which is only 25 miles from the test site. Now, there's a huge difference between 2 times background and 200 times background. And maybe that's attributable to translation difficulties, a typo, somebody getting overenthusiastic or misreading the readings, or something more sinister. At this time, we don't know. But very quickly, Russian authorities asked the authorities in Severodvinsk to take down the radiation readings from their town's website, and they did. Exit all mention and reference of that data. With visions of Chernobyl, the location itself, if not the HBO series, dancing in their heads, local residents stormed pharmacies in the region, which quickly sold out their entire stock of iodine tablets. Potassium iodine is well known to block the thyroid's uptake of radioactive iodine, though it is less well known that potassium iodide does absolutely nothing to help with exposure to cesium, strontium, plutonium, or other radionuclides. On Saturday, the Russian state-run atomic agency, Rosatom, said the failure occurred in, quote, an isotope power source for a liquid-fueled rocket engine, end quote. While the wording was confusing, it was the first official acknowledgement that the accident was nuclear in nature. U.S. officials suspected that the explosion was that of a new nuclear missile of the kind that Premier Putin bragged about developing in a 2018 speech. It was believed that it was a test of what is known as a Skyfall cruise missile. Also on Saturday, TASS, the state news agency, cited an unnamed official at Rosatom as saying that the explosion on the test platform had knocked the scientists who died into the sea, suggesting the reactor or what remained of it also wound up in the water. On Sunday night, Russia confirmed for the first time that it was a small nuclear reactor that had exploded during an experiment at the White Sea. To be clear, that's a nuclear reactor powering a non-nuclear warhead, potentially delivering two weapons for the price of one. On Monday, August 12, residents of Ninoksa, the small town closest to the site, were told to evacuate. Villagers were asked to leave on Wednesday morning, August 14, due to, quote, planned military activities, of which they had no previous notice. According to the head of the press service of the Severodvinsk administration, a special train was being sent to carry out the approximately 450 residents, with no word of when they would be able to return. This echoed loudly of Pripyat, the worker town next to Chernobyl, where after the accident, residents were told that they were going to have to leave for a little while and were never allowed to return. However, again on Monday, August 12, by 4 p.m., the evacuation orders for Ninoksa was rescinded with no explanation given. Meanwhile, the number of dead reported by the Russians keeps fluctuating, with the best tally now being 7 dead, including 5 high-level nuclear scientists and 2 workers. A regional news site, Northern News, reported that the doctors at a civilian hospital who first treated the victims of the accident had not been informed of the radiation danger. This also has echoes of Chernobyl. After treating the patients, the doctors at the Archangel Regional Clinical Hospital found that their scrubs were causing radiation meters to click. The patients were taken to Moscow and the rooms they had lain in were sealed. Then the report said the doctors were also transferred to the capital for medical evaluations. Rachel Maddow, on her MSNBC program of Tuesday, August 13, gave more than 17 minutes over to this story and included in it visuals of a caravan of ambulances purportedly carrying the patients and doctors to the hospital in Moscow. The video shows one of the ambulances with the back door sealed in plastic tape or plastic wrap. Maddow, or whoever wrote and approved her copy, surmised that this could have been done to seal in radiation. However, she failed to mention that the single brief clip of a single ambulance so swathed in plastic was repeated 3 times in a row, giving the appearance that several of the ambulances had been so treated, a hypothesis for which we have no visual confirmation. Rachel, might that have been a little tip of the hat to nuclear fear porn? All this may bring to mind the specter of the Chernobyl nuclear meltdown, when Russian authorities did not acknowledge the disaster until radiation was detected in Europe, initially by Sweden. However, as of this recording, no radiation from the recent incident appears to have reached Europe. The Norwegian Radiation Protection Authority says it has detected nothing unusual yet, and the UK's radiation monitoring network told New Scientist that it had no reports of other countries recording increases in radiation levels. A representative of Greenpeace Russia said, lack of detection by Norway and Finland so far makes us assume that only trace concentrations may reach Europe. And computer modeling at the National Academy of Sciences in Ukraine suggest only small concentrations might reach into Ukraine. No word has come from the Bologna Foundation, which monitors Russia for radiation releases and other nuclear matters. One last point. The nuclear fuel carrier Severyanka remains inside closed-off waters near the missile explosion site. It is believed by some that it may be there to assist in the cleanup. So whatever's happening at the Nanoska missile site, we don't yet know everything there is to be known. I caution listeners that this missile explosion was one of three incidents which took place in Russia in a single week, with two explosions rocking an ammunition storage facility in the Krasnoyarsk region starting on August 5th. That spectacular explosion footage that you see on YouTube and has been picked up by the online echo chamber, where some of the explosions look nuclear in nature with mushroom clouds, they are not, repeat, not from the missile explosion in Ninoska. They're from the ammo dump. And in a possibly related story, Russia touts their Arctic floating nuclear plant safety despite concerns about a possible Chernobyl on ice. And if that's not been enough Russian news for you today...
Nuclear hot seat, nuclear hot seat, nuclear hot seat, none that's out of week.
The news from Russia getting you down? There's a cure for that. It's Chernobyl vodka. Yes, that's right. Atomic, A-T-O-M-I-K, remember it's Russian, grain spirit, is the artisan vodka. It is made with grain and water exclusively from the Chernobyl exclusion zone. According to Professor Jim Smith, based at the University of Portsmouth in the UK and one of the people involved with this project, we took rye that was only slightly contaminated and water from the Chernobyl aquifer, and we distilled it. When asked if the vodka was radioactive, Smith said, "This is no more radioactive than any other vodka. Any chemist will tell you when you distill something, impurities stay in the waste product." Perhaps, but that does not answer the question, is it radioactive? Smith claims not, but then... we're dealing with something Russian here. Can we believe anything? Strangely, there only seems to be one bottle of this vodka in existence on the face of the planet, though there are reports of it being tasted and tested, so who knows how much of it there is. Let's hope there's not much more, because there's nothing worse than trying to drown your sorrows when you think about radiation by giving yourself more radiation. It's not a good thing. And that's why Chernobyl vodka, atomic grain spirit, and the people behind it, including Professor Jim Smith, you are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, none that's out of week.
We'll have this week's featured interview in just a moment, but first, the pro-nuclear propaganda just keeps coming, thick and fast, setting up talking points that the casual reader or legislator or journalist will catch in headlines and absorb as gospel truth when it's really just the opposite. What is there to regularly, consistently counter the lies of the nuclear industry with all their money and influence and smug, smarmy talking points, trying to justify a technology that will poison us all, if not blow us off the planet? That's why Nuclear Hot Seat exists, to stand up and speak truth to power, whether they're listening or not, at least you are. For going on 9 years, Nuclear Hot Seat has been one of the only places where you can get a one-hour hit of honest, non-hysterical, verified nuclear information every week. Interviews with activists, genuine experts, a roundup of international news, never enough time for all the stories that deserve it, numb nuts of the week, bad puns, sometimes even a touch of musical theater. Where else can you find all of this in a weekly counterbalance to nuclear industry lies? Of course, the show has been operating for years on a budget that's less than what one nuclear lobbyist pays for one dinner with a powerful legislator. And that budget is dependent upon you, the listeners, to help us keep going. So if you stand against nukes and want to help get the word out, help us with a donation. We make it easy. Just go to nuclearhotseat.com and click on the big red donate button to send a one-time donation or set up a monthly donation of any size. And to send us a monthly $5, let's face it, the same as a cup of coffee and a good tip here in the U.S., just click on the big green donate button at nuclearhotseat.com. Please, do what you can now, and know that whatever you do to help, I am deeply grateful that you're listening and that you care. Now here's today's feature. The anniversary of the atomic bomb explosions on Hiroshima and Nagasaki were last week, August 6 and 9 respectively. The issues brought to the surface of consciousness by those two anniversaries have again raised the image of a joint anti-nuclear and peace movement. Let's face it, those two pieces really fit together. But for whatever reason, peace has not been a big focal point here in the United States.
Perhaps because none of us has ever really seen a single moment that our country has not been at war.
But it became clear from the demonstration I attended in Los Angeles' Little Tokyo on Wednesday, August 8th, that peace activism and anti-nuclear activism are inextricably connected and are starting to weave themselves together again. Perhaps in that lies the strength of all our future actions. At the commemoration event, sponsored by a long list of peace and social justice organizations, I first spoke with Denise Duffield. She is Associate Director of Physicians for Social Responsibility in Los Angeles and the recipient of the 2019 Bill Mitchell Grassroots Activist of the Year Award by the Alliance for Nuclear Accountability. Denise, what brought you down to the demonstration today?
This is the week of remembrance, the 74th anniversary of the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And every year we take time to remember the victims of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and to renew our commitment to a world without nuclear weapons.
And what is Back from the Brink, the call to prevent nuclear war?
Back from the Brink, the call to prevent nuclear war is an incredibly exciting grassroots campaign that is national in scope. We are endorsed now by 261 organizations, 33 cities, and 4 states. It's a policy platform of 5 common sense policies to protect us from nuclear war. They are renouncing the option of using nuclear weapons first for the United States. Of course, had we had such a policy in 1945, maybe we would not have had the bombings. They are restricting the president's sole unchecked authority to launch a first nuclear strike, removing nuclear weapons from hair trigger alert, canceling plans to replace our entire nuclear arsenal with enhanced weapons, and finally, the most important one, which is pursuing a verifiable agreement for all nuclear weapon states to eliminate their arsenals completely. And we're very excited because the city of Tucson just unanimously passed a resolution on Tuesday. Los Angeles, of course, passed its own resolution a year ago. Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Salt Lake City are just some of the cities that have passed resolutions, small towns on the East Coast. It's really starting to pick up. In addition to the state of California last year, the state of Oregon passed a resolution, and the state of Maine's Senate passed a resolution, and New Jersey's Assembly passed a resolution. We're really just getting started. We think this is has the potential to be very much like the Freeze Movement, where it is completely and entirely a grassroots movement starting in little towns and cities throughout the country and working its way up.
What, if anything, is the coordination or the association that you're doing with ICAN, the International Campaign for the Abolition of Nuclear Weapons?
Many of the resolutions that are being passed also call for the United States to embrace the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. And many of the cities that we are getting these resolutions passed then can become added on to ICANN City's appeal. In fact, the city's appeal of ICANN was inspired quite a bit by Los Angeles and Baltimore. Only theirs, of course, is worldwide. So they're approaching cities throughout the world to support the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons.
How can listeners of Nuclear Hot Seat help support this important initiative, this grassroots initiative?
Go to preventnuclearwar.org. Again, that's preventnuclearwar.org. There, if you have an organization, you can have your organization endorsed, and you can also sign up as an individual, and then you'll get emails from us. When there's a resolution or something moving through your town, then you can show up and support it. The city of Santa Monica is going to be considering a resolution soon. We'll be sending out emails to folks in that area to show up and building outward from there.
And is this USA-centric or around the world?
Yeah, this is about the United States. This is calling on the United States to make nuclear disarmament the centerpiece of its national security policy.
Denise Duffield of Physicians for Responsibility, Los Angeles. The music you heard in the background was provided live by Go Kurosawa, who describes himself as a bicultural music samurai and has a group called Go, G-O-H. His music ended as the event began, hosted by the organizer, Tsukuru Fors Lauritsen. The commemoration event began with prayers sung by Tina Calderon, an elder representing the Chumash Tongva nations, which are indigenous to Southern California. She translated the opening prayer for us.
Thank you to all who gather in our ancestral village we call Yangna to commemorate a critical and devastating time in history. When I think of how humans greedily take an important element from a Yoyoko Hod, our Earth Mother, uranium, a metal that naturally warms our Earth, and they mine it while polluting the waters on tribal lands without a second thought to dirtying those waters, and then they use it as a key component for mass destruction, it deeply saddens me. Even unintentional nuclear disasters happen. Look at Fukushima, Three Mile Island, and Chernobyl. So today I add my prayers to yours as we remember the innocent people that lost their lives in Hiroshima and Nagasaki and others that were severely injured by this wicked act. And I close with hope that love and light brings us together in unity and that the powers in control listen to our pleas for a safer world.
Tina Calderon, an elder representing Chumash Tongva Nations. There were additional prayers offered through the event by two Buddhist monks and a Christian minister, including an incense-burning ceremony at 7:02 Pacific time, the exact time of the bomb being dropped on Hiroshima. Dr. Jimmy Hara is a board member of Physicians for Social Responsibility. As a child, he was interned in a concentration camp here in the United States. Here's what he had to say.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt called the bombing of Pearl Harbor a day of infamy. I would submit to you there are two additional days of infamy that we should not ever forget. The first occurred on August 6, 1945, with the bombing of Hiroshima, where 140,000 individuals, women, children, and the elderly lost their lives. Not men, because they were off fighting the war. A day or two later, the Nuremberg Tribunal was going on, declaring the Nazis had committed war crimes. However, the following day, August 9, 1945, Nagasaki was bombed, and 80,000 individuals, again, women, children, and the elderly, perished. So, as a Japanese American, and Japan being the only country that was a victim of the atomic bomb, I hope we never forget and never have to experience that ever again on this planet.
Dr. Jimmy Hara of Physicians for Social Responsibility. Representatives of several peace activism groups attended, with sign-up sheets and petitions in hand. Here's one of them.
My name is Kathy Deppe, and I lived in Los Angeles since 2006 in the area here. And I'm here on behalf of my church, Holy Faith Episcopal in Inglewood, and also on behalf of another group that is endorsing this event today, against war with Iran and for peace in the world and for an end to nuclear weaponry and the spread of nuclear weapons around the world. And that is a war tax resistance coordinating committee. We have decided not to pay all or some of our federal income tax as a protest, and we redirect the money to peaceful purposes instead.
Activist Kathy Delpy. Interesting concept. We will explore that further. Another longtime peace organizer, Frances Yasmin Motawala, formerly of Peace Action Los Angeles, is now a candidate for Congress in California's District 34. She was one of the featured speakers.
The bombings of Nagasaki and Hiroshima and the meltdown at Fukushima were horrific events that serve as poignant examples of the consequences of nuclear proliferation. From their ashes, the idiom, never again, has risen as a rallying cry for peace activists all across the country and all across the world, uniting us in the fight against violence of all forms. But has our nation actually learned from these tragedies? Or have we forgotten the mantra of never again in an era where mobile apps and political divisions distract us from the renewed threat of nuclear annihilation, the constant terror of mass shootings, and the heartbreaking rise of concentration camps on our own soil? The common thread with these phenomena is the same as when we first split the atom. It's always been about power. Since its inception, nuclear technology has been concentrated in the hands of political players whose greedy desires to manipulate the fates of nations is absolute. It's no accident that the institutions they control celebrate violence as a symbol of strength and portray empathy towards human suffering as weakness. Dehumanization is necessary for the perpetuation of warfare, and war yields power and profits to the shadowy elite. It should come as no surprise that dehumanizing language and us versus them rhetoric have become so prevalent in our modern society. After all, you've got to believe that the person you're looking at is the enemy and that you're superior to them in order to pull that trigger, slam that cage shut, or drop that bomb. There's a good guy and a bad guy. You're the good guy. Bomb them all. Bomb them all. That's a phrase that I heard almost every week throughout my many years of street canvassing, sometimes accompanied with racist slander from people telling me to go back home. I don't think they were talking about Chicago. One conversation that has really always stuck out in my memory, a man who proudly informed me that while not all Muslims were terrorists, all terrorists were Muslims. Yet the mass shootings of recent weeks are a stark contrast to his assertion, and a chilling reminder that the demographic committing mass murder today is the same as it was when our bombs dropped the size in Japan. I'd like to say that I was able to reach that man when I tried to explain that racial hatred and greed actually motivate mass killings, but instead he took offense, believing that he was being unfairly targeted for my failure to sympathize with his privilege. And they call us snowflakes. But for every story like this, I had many, many more that had happy endings. My days of organizing were filled with opportunities to build bridges, to mobilize people and educate people who had tremendous capacity for love and for change. These community members, like all of us gathered here today, we're able to look back at our nation's legacy of violence and admit that we've made some terrible mistakes. We've done a lot of great things too, but that doesn't absolve us from making amends and working together for a better future. And it's in this spirit that I invite you to join me in asking forgiveness from those we've harmed, from the countries we've bombed, for the homes we've made war zones, for the literal and figurative fallout from our mad ambitions and our lust for power. Please forgive us, and know that there will always be those who refuse to forget, who don't just say never again, but live it too. Now, more than ever, we must be vigilant in our efforts to stop the threat of nuclear annihilation. It will not be through luck that we survive. It'll be through the organizing and activism and spirit of organizers here today. Thank you for being here, for taking action today, tomorrow, and together until we rid the world of nuclear weapons, concentration camps, and gun violence. No more Fukushimas, no more Hiroshimas, no more Nagasakis, no more mass shootings, no more war.
Longtime peace organizer and now congressional candidate Frances Yasmin Motiwala. Of course, all of us do this work for the future, one that we will probably not live long enough to see. So I decided to ask one of the next generation of activists about it. My next interviewee turned 9 just 3 days after the commemoration. What is your name?
Milo Borghello.
And why are you here today?
Because my mom brought me here.
And what do you know about the atom bomb in Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
I know that the nuclear bomb hit Hiroshima and Nagasaki on this day.
Are you in favor of nuclear bombs?
No, I'm not okay.
And what don't you like about them?
It hit Japan, which is where my mom is from.
Milo Borghello, a member of the next generation of anti-nuclear peace activists, whose perspective will only broaden from here. When the hour-long commemoration ended, I caught up with the event's organizer, Tsukuru Fors-Lauritsen. Tsukuru, what led you to put together this event, this commemoration today?
I've been doing this for the past 2 years, but this time, I think we are getting really dangerously close to the possibility of another nuclear war. And I think we need to make people aware. People like myself, 4 years ago, ordinary people who right now care about, you know, making ends meet and surviving, but we have to make them aware of the danger that they're in.
If you have a message that you want to put out so that people beyond this moment right here can hear what you have to say, what would that be?
It is very crucial time for the humankind, regardless of where you live, United States, Asia, Europe, doesn't matter. It is a very, very dangerous time. So I want everyone to stand up and make their voices heard. Demand your government, demand the politicians who are accountable to you, because they are supposed to represent you. Make them hear you that you want peace and not war, and you really want nuclear weapons abolished and also nuclear power plants abolished as well.
You are from Hiroshima. What was it like? What was the legacy, and how much was the bombing discussed or not discussed while you were growing up?
Hiroshima, I have to say, is a unique city in Japan too, meaning that people in Hiroshima deeply care about what happened in the past, 74 years ago today. So they do talk about the history of A-bombing, and we learn it in a school as well, especially my school, because there were so many people who died at my school. And, school children in Hiroshima, every August 6th, come to school, despite the fact it's in the middle of summer vacation. They come and always offer prayer. I wasn't born in Hiroshima. I was born in Sasebo, Nagasaki, which is a very pro-American town because we have a naval base in Sasebo. So moving to Hiroshima when I was 12, really shook my world. It's really shocked me to spend time with my friends. Like almost all of them had someone in the family affected by the bomb. And also many of my teachers were survivors. And, growing up and ending up here in the United States and realizing that what a unique experience that was. And that made me realize that I have a responsibility to take this message to people in this country and beyond, and so that it won't be forgotten and so that we won't repeat this.
Just a nagging question in the back of my mind. The school that you're talking about, was that possibly the same one that Setsuko Thurlow talks about? she's with the International Campaign for the Abolition of Nuclear Weapons. Is that the same school?
Yes, it is. And I am really proud to, I've never met her myself, but I know she always carries the list of 350 people to, you know, wherever she speaks. She brings our school with her every time she speaks. And I'm very proud to share this history with her, and I admire her greatly.
Former Hiroshima resident and organizer of the commemoration in Los Angeles, Tsukuru Fors-Lauritsen. That unexpected connection between Tsukuru and Setsuko Thurlow reminded me of the understated power of the speech that Thurlow gave while accepting the 2018 Nobel Peace Prize on behalf of the International Campaign for the Abolition of Nuclear Weapons. It seems that now is a fitting time to revisit that profound speech from December 10, 2018. Setsuko Thurlow accepting the Nobel Peace Prize on behalf of the International Campaign for the Abolition of Nuclear Weapons.
I speak as a member of the family of Hibakusha. Those of us who survived the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. For more than seven decades, we have been working hard for the total abolition of nuclear weapons. We have stood in solidarity with those harmed by the production and testing of these horrific weapons around the world. People from places with long forgotten names, like Mururoa, Eka, Semipalatinsk, Maralanga, Bikini. People whose lands and seas were poisoned with radiation, whose bodies were experimented upon, whose cultures were forever disrupted. We are not content to be victims. We refuse to wait for a fiery end or to slow poisoning of our world. We refuse to sit idly in terror as the so-called great powers took us past nuclear dusk and brought us recklessly close to nuclear midnight. We rose up. We shared our stories of survival. We said, nuclear weapons and humanities cannot coexist. Today, I want you to feel in this hall the presence of all those who perished in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I want you to feel above and around a great cloud of 250,000 souls. Each person had a name. Each person was loved by someone. Let us ensure that their deaths were not in vain. A I was just 13 years old girl when the United States dropped the first atomic bomb on my city of Hiroshima. I remember that morning vividly. At 8:15, I saw a blinding bluish-white flash. I remember having the sensation of floating in the air. When I regained the consciousness in the total darkness and silence, I found myself pinned under the collapsed building. I knew I was faced with death. I began hearing faint voices of my classmates around me. Mother, help me. God, help me. Then all of a sudden, somebody shook my left shoulder from behind. The man saying, "Don't give up, keep pushing, keep kicking." You see the sun ray coming through that opening. Crawl toward it as quickly as possible. As I crawled out, the rubble was on fire. Most of my classmates in the same building were burnt to death alive. I saw all around me utter, unrecognizable, unimaginable devastation. Procession of ghostly figures shuffled by. Grotesquely wounded people, they were bleeding, burned, blackened, and swollen. Parts of their bodies were missing. Flesh and skin hung from their bones. Some with their own eyeballs hanging in their hands. Some with their bellies burst open, their intestines hanging out. The foul stench of burnt human flesh filled the air. Thus, with one bomb, my beloved city was obliterated. Most of its residents were civilians who were incinerated, vaporized, carbonized, among them members of my own family and 351 schoolmates of mine. In the weeks, months, and years that followed, many thousand more would die, often in random and mysterious ways, from the delayed effects of radiation. Still to this day, radiation is killing survivors. Whenever I remember Hiroshima, the first image that comes to my mind is my four-year-old nephew, Eiji. His little body transformed into an unrecognizable melted chunk of flesh. He kept begging for water in a faint voice until his death released him from agony. To me, He came to represent all the innocent children of the world, threatened as they are at this very moment by nuclear weapons. Every second of every day, nuclear weapons endanger everyone we love and everything we hold dear. We must not tolerate this insanity any longer. Through our agony and the sheer struggle to survive and to rebuild our lives from the ashes, we Hibakusha became convinced that we must warn the world about these apocalyptic weapons. Time and again, we shared our testimonies. But still, some refused to see Hiroshima and Nagasaki atrocities as war crimes. They accepted propaganda that these were good bombs that had ended the war, just war. It was this myth that led the disastrous nuclear arms race, a race that continues to this day. 9 nations still threaten to incinerate entire cities, to destroy life on Earth, to make our beautiful world uninhabitable for our future generations. The development of nuclear weapons signifies not the country's elevation to greatness, but to its descent to the darkest depths of depravity. These weapons are not a necessary evil. They are the ultimate evil. On the 7th of July this year, I was overwhelmed with joy when a great majority of the world's nations voted to adopt the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. Having witnessed humanity at its worst, I witnessed that day humanity at its best. We Hibakusha had been waiting for the ban for 72 years. Let this be the beginning of the end of nuclear weapons. All responsible leaders will listen to this, will sign this treaty, and history will judge harshly those who reject it. No longer shall their abstract theories mask the genocidal reality of their practices. No longer shall deterrence be viewed as anything but a deterrent to disarmament. No longer shall we live under the mushroom cloud of fear. To the officials of nuclear weapon nations and to their accomplices under the so-called nuclear umbrella, I say this: listen to our testimony, heed our warning, and know that your actions are consequential. You are each an integral part of the system of violence that threatens humankind. Let us all be alert to the banality of evil. To every president and prime minister of every nation of the world, I beseech you, join this treaty forever, eradicate the threat of nuclear annihilation. When I was a 13-year-old girl trapped in the smoldering rubble, I kept pushing, I kept moving toward the light, and I survived. Our light now is a banned treaty. To all in this hall and all listening around the world, I repeat those words that I heard in the ruins of Hiroshima. Don't give up. Keep pushing. Keep moving. See the light. Crawl towards it. Tonight, we march through the streets of Oslo with torches aflame. Let us follow each other out of the dark night of nuclear terror.
Setsko Thurlow of the International Campaign for the Abolition of Nuclear Weapons, which can be found at the website ICANW.org. Here's today's final thought. While the ceremony commemorating Hiroshima and Nagasaki ended and everyone dispersed, it was clear to us all just how few we were and how enormous the task ahead of us. But at the same time, know that we are the seeds that will grow, that must grow, into a mighty movement. Peace and denuclearization are as vital, if not more so, than even climate change. After all, even if we manage to slow, halt, and even reverse the snowballing out-of-control climate catastrophe that is unfolding now, we will still be stuck with nuclear. Nuclear waste, nuclear weapons, nuclear reactors, the contamination from the manufacturing, refining, uranium mining, radioactive problems with a half-life of beyond the human forever. So yes, let's bring kids like the now 9-year-old Milo to our demonstrations. Tell them what has happened already and why it should never happen again. Kids are smart. They'll get it. And for the adults in the room, we need to gird our loins and prepare for next year, when the 75th anniversary of Hiroshima and Nagasaki will have pro-nukesters inundating legitimate news sites and op-ed pages with an orgy of stories of how necessary nukes are to our well-being and how we cannot live without them. No, ultimately, we cannot live with them. Even with bombs unlaunched, every step of the nuclear fuel chain is a disaster for some community. The latest, still unfolding scare in Russia is but another in a long and ever-growing list of nuclear oopses that are as bad news for people living at distance from it as they are for those close by. That's because Earth is a rock in the middle of a bubble, in the middle of nowhere. What happens on Earth stays on Earth. There is no planet B. Radioactive materials released in one location migrate throughout the biosphere by the water, the air, the dust, the dirt, and direct contamination of our bodies and possessions. So if we want humanity to have a future, meaning our grandchildren and their grandchildren and their grandchildren's grandchildren, we need to start organizing and fighting for it now. This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, August 13, 2019. Thanks to all of you for listening, and a big shout out to Nuclear Hot Seat listeners and followers. You guys are around the world, literally 123 countries on 6 continents and counting. Now, for those of you who haven't already done so, you can go to our Nuclear Hot Seat Facebook page, or better yet, go to the website. There's a big yellow opt-in box, and you put in your first name and your email address, you will get Nuclear Hot Seat delivered to your inbox every week as soon as it posts. Now, if you've got a story lead, a hot tip, or a suggestion of someone to interview, send an email to info@nuclearhotseat.com. And if you appreciate weekly, verifiable news updates about nuclear issues around the world, take a moment right now and send a donation of any size to nuclearhotseat.com. We really appreciate your support and are grateful for it. This episode of Nuclear Hot Seat is copyright 2019, Libby Halevi and Hartestry Communications. All rights reserved, but fair use allowed as long as proper attribution is provided. This is Libby Halevi of Hartestry Communications, the heart of the art of communicating, reminding you that, as Setsko Thurlow said, the nuclear arsenal represents a self-destruct button for the human race. There you go. You have just had your nuclear wake-up call. Now don't go back to sleep, whatever you do, because truly, we are all in the nuclear hot seat.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat. It's the bomb.
Question everything. Intelligent radio for intelligent people. UCY.TV.